This is the Oil Sand Tech Podcast
with Aaron Shearhart.
The oil sand industry is the largest unconventional oil business in Canada. And on this podcast, we'll be interviewing people who are building products and building services that can improve the oil sands. We tell the story of how to build products and bring them to market. The Oil Sand Tech Podcast. And now, Aaron Shearhart.
So welcome to episode 4. So on today's episode, I sat down with Siv Hun of SecureNook, and we had a detailed chat about security concerns within the oil and gas industry. And it's really interesting to me that there is a risk of PLCs and kind of operating controllers actually being taken control of from an external perspective within a secure facility. And so I'll just start off with the quote of the week here and give you a little taste of what's to come. Thank you for joining us.
What Stuxnet did, it went on the controller. So what you would see on your screen is that everything's all right. Although what the controller was sending down here to a centrifuge was something completely different. So the centrifuge spinned totally out of control in terms of what you would see on the screen. So this was a visualization for people that it's actually possible. You can attack a controller in a secure facility, and you can manipulate it without nobody, you know, with nobody noticing until it's too late.
Welcome to the Oil Sand Tech Podcast. So today on the show, we have Siv Hun, the founder of SecureNook, a company focused on cybersecurity threats in the oil and gas industry. Siv is also an associate professor with the Norwegian Center for Critical Infrastructure and is an expert on security associated with the oil and gas industry, and with a specific focus on offshore drilling. So Siv, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Siv, can you tell us about SecureNook? How did you come up with the idea to start the company, and I guess what are you up to?
The idea of the company was actually born almost 15 years ago, and that was when I was younger, a massive attack that people probably remember as either the I Love You virus or the Melissa virus, which caused the company that I was working at that time a lot of pain and a lot of money. So I basically started looking into how would you penetrate systems, what kind of way can you take down systems. And back then I was in the telecommunication company. In a telecommunication company, so I was working on 3G, fixed network, and protocols. And then started looking into control systems in Norway, the most important industry in Norway is oil and gas. And oil and gas in Norway means offshore and deep water. And that is the most critical part of the Norwegian infrastructure. So I also started getting interested in who might be capable of attacking a offshore asset outside of Norway. And then Stuxnet happened in 2010, and the market opened, and I founded a company focusing on oil and gas, and specifically how you would want to be able to detect attacks similar to Stuxnet, which at the time was a paradigm shift into an advanced precision threat or a targeted attack that goes on a specific target, which would be something that would be relevant for the deep water assets in Norway.
So what is Stuxnet, and what was the impact in the oil and gas industry of that change?
So Stuxnet didn't actually attack the oil and gas, but it was an attack, a targeted and very sophisticated attack on the Iranian nuclear program, actually, although it was targeted to the Natanz plant nuclear plant, it attacked Siemens PLCs. That's more or less the core of it. A lot been said about Stuxnet, but from the oil and gas perspective, the core thing is that it was the Siemens PLC, so a controller that's used in a lot of very advanced systems in offshore drilling, specifically for Norway, was the victim or the host that was attacked. The Stuxnet also migrated into the oil and gas industry without doing much harm, because it was basically targeted for the Iranian, to stop the Iranian program, nuclear enrichment program. So that's the scare. And what happened with Stuxnet is, in a setup of control system, you have a person, like a driller. You have an HMI, so a computer. And then you have a specific controller, which is a single board computer or a very limited type of computer. And then you have the tool, like a top drive or a MUD system, anything that's related to actually the drilling process. What Stuxnet did, it went on the controller. So what you would see on your screen is that everything's all right. Although what the controller was sending down here to a centrifuge was something completely different. So the centrifuge spinned totally out of control in terms of what you would see on the screen. So this was a visualization for people that it's actually possible. You can attack a controller in a secure facility, and you can manipulate it without nobody, you know, with nobody noticing until it's too late.
So with these targeted attack, then it's possible for a major pump to be showing A-OK on the control panel, but actually be spinning out of control out in the field.
Yeah, or you're sitting there, thinking in oil and gas context, and specifically out in the deep water, you're sitting in a drilling cabinet and you are giving input into the joystick. And then what you observe is, for instance, that the top drive smashes down in a drilling floor. And you did not authorize that movement. And at that point, you have no way of knowing whether the software is corrupt, whether it's a bug, whether you're under attack. Because the consequence, the way you see it on the outside, would be more or less the same thing. And you've had incidents like that where it's taken a long time until somebody actually found the malware, because you start looking in the wrong place. You start looking for an infinite loop. You start looking for error in the control loop, in the commands, if there's any software bugs, for instance, on the HMI, on the anything that the interpretation between the different components. And that takes a long time, rather than if you knew that it was a malware and you knew where it was and you knew that was the reason for it, you would be able to remove it and continue drilling. So the scare part is that it just looks like anything else, like a software bug.
So it's very, it takes time intensive in order to actually investigate and find the root cause of the problem is something you've never seen before.
Some of the analysis, if the attack is exploiting something that what's called a zero-day vulnerability, which is a weakness or a vulnerability in a system that nobody knows about. It's going to take time even to find that vulnerability, nevertheless the attack. And the attackers are becoming more and more sophisticated, so they stay hidden. You don't see a process running, you don't see any activity. They're hidden in a memory, and as soon as you turn the computer off or the controller off, you don't have any evidence of anything ever happened. So in some of the cases, you never figure out what the attack was and where it came from.
So maybe now, can you tell us a little bit about product offering that SecureNUC offers and as a solution to these kind of issues?
Yes, sure. Be happy to. Part of the challenge on a drilling rig, and specifically for drilling control systems that we've been looking at for the last 5 years, is that these systems, when they're installed, they are meant to live for 15, 20 years. Some of the systems you find out there today are more than 25 years old. And that means that you have a lot of old equipment, which also means that IT-specific products and security protection products won't work. You don't have antivirus that runs on old equipment like that. And also in terms of, for instance, the upgrades that they do on the Windows platform right now, they're still installing Windows XP. So you have a lot of old operating systems, you have a lot of old computers, and you also have very limited processing capabilities of a lot of these pieces of equipment. So what we've done is that we've developed a system that's comprised of non-intrusive software agents that are integrated into each node. These are the monitoring parts of the product. The monitoring part of the product doesn't affect the controller very much. It doesn't do any of the intelligence on the actual host. What it does is that it senses the capacity of the network, and whenever its network capability and the processing power on the host is within a predefined OK status, it'll send information to what we've called a detector, which is a which is an industrial PC that does most of the processing, so the actual analysis of the data. The analysis of the data is based on a disruptive technology and also based on the way that people or security professionals like myself think. Because part of my job used to be as a white hat, which means I get paid to hack systems. And I'm trained in order to step-by-step figure out how I break into a system, what's the easiest path in is, and what kind of damage I can do. So we kind of flip that around, and we don't look for code patterns, but we look for behavior patterns. And that analysis then that's done locally is brought back to a onshore center where we gather information from multiple drilling assets. So for instance, if a company has drilling assets around the world, if there's an attack on one of them, we will basically be able to deduce whether something similar is happening on other of their drilling assets in other parts of the world, or whether this is, for instance, locally, which will mean that it might be politically motivated. And the basic principle here is to make sure you don't add any additional stress to the drilling control system, that you keep things segregated so that the monitoring is as simple as possible, and that you do a step-by-step analysis, and that you do most of the intelligence part onshore, if at all possible.
So today, what kind of threats do you see that the oil and gas industry has faced from cybersecurity?
A recent report from the cybersecurity group in Purdue shows, not surprisingly, I guess, but that more than 50%, a lot more than 50% of what we see are espionage. And in the news, you would hear that most of it is Chinese. It's not just Chinese. But a lot of it is initiated somehow from China via different other countries and other channels. In addition, you see a lot of virus viruses that are not targeted. These are basically, in most cases, actually, to be honest, coming from people working back to back, being bored, visiting sites they shouldn't be visiting, and getting infected by non-targeted malware that makes the system unstable. The other thing that you're seeing a little bit increase in is spear phishing. For instance, we had a big spear phishing attack on Norwegian oil industry earlier this year. And the speculation now is what the attackers wanted to do with the information. So usually in a situation like this, this is the first stage of a larger attack. So you gather information first in order to know what the paths into a system would be. What's the weakest point, and how would you go about getting to a specific rig, for instance, out in the North Sea? Because in most cases, you wouldn't go through the operator. You go through one of the vendors, one of the suppliers, because they don't have the same resources for cybersecurity, for protection, not the same rigors, policies, and so on and so forth. So you're mainly seeing espionage, seeing non-targeted viruses, and you started to see more malicious spear phishing and indications of small denial of service type of attacks, which means you take down part of the network. That's more or less what you're seeing today.
So in terms of I'm not familiar with the term of spear phishing, but so spear phishing is kind of trying to identify what the weakest link is within a security system, or how would you define spear phishing?
Phishing is straight out. You either send a bait out in the network to collect information, or you send emails, for instance, looking like a legitimate site and with a link that you click on. And in this case here, it has a specific target. It's trying to take you to a specific place for gathering information, and it's looking for specific information. So this way, you could actually get information in terms of network structure, IP addresses, ports that are open, people's passwords, and combine that with information that you can find online in terms of their job responsibilities, where they worked before. And what I would do in this situation is that I'll add a social engineering attack to it in addition, if I can find, because people are the easiest targets, they're the easiest one to manipulate. So if I know that somebody is actually working for a vendor that has a so-and-so policy in terms of their computers that I bring out on the rig, and I would know that by sending different types of requests using emails, mm-hmm. to see what kind of ports I can lure information out from, and find a weak person, pardon me for saying so, and giving them a USB stick with a video on or a game on for free in the store that I will figure out that they go to by looking at their Facebook site or at their running event if I Google and see that they're active in running. So find a social place where you can earn trust, and this way get the information out. That's a lot easier than trying to hack your way out, basically.
So I guess from that perspective as well, you're saying the attacks or the threats that are in the oil and gas industry, they're very sophisticated by the sounds of it. I mean, that is, if you're going to take an attack and you're going to go to that level of detail, that it's going to take quite a bit of planning and assumingly some time.
You know, in most cases, the reason why we haven't seen anything like that right now is because nobody has the motivation to do that. The reason why we saw Stuxnet is because Well, depending on what kind of rumor you believe, it is probably either a collaboration between the U.S. and Israel or a U.S.-initiated attack. And that's a nation-sponsored attack, which is something completely different than from an innocent virus. And the oil and gas industry, although some of the stuff that's happening is sophisticated, but it's less sophisticated than that. A lot of the Chinese espionage, for instance, they don't have the same experience in hiding and the same culture in hiding their tracks as a lot of the Westerns have, because we're basically trained a little different in a more open society with different privacy laws. So you're seeing more and more sophistication, but you're not at the level that I just described. That would be a targeted attack, which is something that the industry is afraid of. I don't think we're going to see it in the next 5 years, to be honest. What we will see is somebody less likely hacktivist, which a lot of people are afraid of, but groups that are becoming stronger that could launch a denial of service attack, because that is today very easy. You don't need any sophistication for that. But to gather information, that's a whole different ball game, basically, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I certainly hope that we don't see any major attacks in the near or even distant future. But maybe now we can kind of shift into what kind of tactics would you recommend a company to try to protect themselves from some of these threats?
So basically, you need to have a procedure and a structure and a culture in place. I think that's actually the easiest and the best protection, meaning it might sound a little naive and not as a very sophisticated advice, but people is still the biggest asset here. And by having good control over any of the equipment that actually brought out on the rig, that all of the private laptops or company laptops of the suppliers have the latest antivirus, have been scanned, that all of the USB devices that's been used are scanned, and that you have some sort of a monitoring system, specifically on the old assets, which which you don't really have the ability to install antivirus, and it wouldn't really be very effective in any case. And then you basically don't know anything unless you have some sort of monitoring, even if it's only for forensics, even if you don't do anything active. For the newer control systems, you're seeing that vendors are starting putting up whitelisting facilities, which basically defines all of the processes and the activities and the connections that are permitted on that box. You can do the same on a network level, and you also would want to follow what the current industry best practices and the standards, which are a strict segregation of duties, which means you separate any of the IT part from the controls part. You do not mix the SCADA system with the controls part, so that you make sure you have a segregated network. That, and in addition to security awareness, so that the people that are actually working on the rig understand that, for instance, you're not supposed to use USB on the controllers or on the HMIs, and the risk of not having like a clean path and following the rules, but what that actually can lead to. Because if you, imagining you work there and you're the reason why, so your computer brought virus on board. The virus took down the rig. Nobody figured out what was happening, and it took you 11 days. That's actually happened on the rig out in the during towing in the South China Sea. And that's 11 days lost of drilling, which in this case wasn't a drill ship, but if it is a large drill ship, that is 11 times $2 million, which is a huge, mm-hmm. a huge loss.
Yeah, and we have a similar situation in the oil sands associated with downtime and the cost of that downtime. And so I know you briefly talked about the separation between IT and your actual operating system. Are there viruses out there that can actually take control of an operating system, or is that actually something that is a threat?
Traditionally, we have a lot of viruses that goes on the different Windows platforms, obviously. The last few years, we've seen more and more on the Linux platform. We're also starting to see on the Mac platform, which I use. So I'm not safe anymore either. You don't see any Mac platforms out on the rig. But you haven't seen viruses as such for a Siemens PLC. It is more an actual attack that are targeted and specific for that operating system. So you can't really call that a virus. So all in all, you're still talking about Windows and Linux. So the scary part, I think, in the oil and gas industry is that you'd see a lot of the control systems that are the simpler ones that are based on some kind of Linux platform and in a lot of cases older platforms running on an SBC, which means that you wouldn't have antivirus on it and it would be vulnerable and also fairly easy to write a virus for it.
Interesting. Well, so thank you very much, Liv, for coming and joining me on the podcast today. I was just wondering, before we kind of finish, is there a way that the listeners could reach out or connect with you?
Yes, sure. They could definitely read more about us on our website, www.securenoc.com, or contact us by email to secure@securenoc.com. We would be happy to follow up with anyone that have more questions. So you can also reach me at my university if you're interested in general what Norway is doing on critical infrastructure.
Well, thank you so much for what's been really an insightful kind of discussion for me. And I think that our listeners will really kind of enjoy, I guess, taking a look at this problem from a different perspective. I know that I've worked in the field in the oil sands with Siemens PLCs, and I never imagined that they could be, I guess, taking control remotely and just kind of run away. And so so I think it really is helpful to identify these threats. And yeah, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening all the way through to the end of episode 4. And so if you're in the Calgary area, coming up on December 10th, we're going to be having the first kickoff for the Oil Sand Tech Meetup. And so that's an informal kind of meeting where you can come and meet others that are interested in building products and services, focused on solving oil sands problems, and also learning new techniques of how to build products and services effectively using a kind of a problem solution focus. So I hope to see some of you there. And you can just check out the website at oilsandtech.com for more information. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.